Okay, I'd like to introduce Rayanne. She's our speaker for tonight. Please give her a nice warm welcome.
Hi, my name is Rayanne. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive eater.
Hi, Rayanne.
Hi, y'all. Thank you for having me. Thank you for your patience with me as I was pulling it all together tonight. I had the great good fortune to be diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease in March of 2012. It didn't feel like good news at the time, but it put me into my last hurrah of compulsive eating, self-abuse, restricting beyond my wildest imagination, and brought me home to the absolute lack that was in the center of my being. I was told that gluten might be a problem, so I thought, well, let me get off gluten, that'll fix it. So let's juice, because there's no gluten in juice, which is really just a well-managed starvation diet. So I lost 30 pounds in 30 days and was delighted. So I had to celebrate with cookies. And so from Thursday to Tuesday, I put 17 of those 30 pounds back on. And was on the phone with my mom explaining how important it was that I juice because of my diagnosis. And she said, but aren't you going to gain it all back? And I was so angry with her. And then I took a deep breath and said, I don't know how many more of these I have left in me. And what I meant was starving myself. And so grateful that I am now, that the adult in me heard me say that. And all I did was hold on to that little tiny piece of information as I went out into the world doing what I do. And I was talking to a sponsor of mine in another program who said, why don't you call Laura and talk to her about food? And I thought, well, food, I can talk about food all day long. Absolutely, I'll call Laura. Called Laura. Now, I knew that she was a member of another fellowship that I was a part of. And that's all I knew about her. I did not know that she was a nurse. I did not know that she had Hashimoto's disease. And I did not know that she was a 19-year veteran of this program. And for the first time, now I've been a member of another fellowship at that time for 24 years. So I can tell you that you need every single one of these. It did not matter how well I knew the 12 steps of any other program. I had to hear my story. Somebody asked me recently, why do you need both programs? I said, because it's about identification. And the other substance I put down and walked away from. You told me that's not appropriate with food. Lord knows I tried a million times. So Laura told me her story, except that she took my story and put her name on it. And I listened and I cried the entire time she was talking, just very quietly. And at the end I said, I hate you and I never want to speak to you again. And will you be my sponsor? And every day she said, yes, call me tomorrow at 8 a.m. And so every day for a week I called her at 8 a.m. and she would talk for 15 minutes. And at the end of that 15 minutes, she'd say, I'll talk to you in the morning, and I'd say, we'll see. Now, I am a willing servant of recovering programs. I show up, boy, when you ask, I do. But I could not commit to looking at this. I was just so angry. You know, if I knew then what I know now, blah, blah, blah. My parents had no idea that the three-year-old little girl who said her prayers and got tucked in every night, the last question I asked before going to sleep was, what's for breakfast? I was using food at the age of three. I had no idea that everybody didn't feel the way I felt and dealt with it the way I dealt with it. When I was in fifth grade, my teacher decided that we should learn what an average was. And so she asked everyone in the fifth grade class to give their weight, and she put it on the chalkboard. And when it got to me, I was the only one with three digits. And I knew it wasn't good to be different all the time. I knew that. And then when I was in seventh grade, before going into seventh grade, the pediatrician had to do the little, yes, she is healthy enough to go to your new school test. And I got up on the scale and he read it aloud and my mother gasped. And I said, is that a lot? Still telling you that story right now makes me want to cry. Because I was trying to take care of myself the only way I knew how. Now, my dad, my biological father, who's a physician, put me on my first diet at 11, 35 carbohydrates a day, which I think translates to two pieces of ham and a Diet Coke. Pretty sure something like that. But he was a physician, so he must know. So, and my mother, God bless her, just wanted me to be happy. And if being thin would make me happy, then she'll do whatever was told to her by a physician who must know because he loves me and he's my father. And so began the guilt of not being able to do that which is remarkably not healthy for me. Nor is it actually addressing the issue that was compulsive eating. When I was, I'm sponsoring a woman now who I recently took through 1, 2, and 3, and before I sat with her that evening, I quietly, all day, took myself back to not a couple of days before I came in, because a couple of days before I came in, I was already torpedoing into hell. But 2 weeks. 2 weeks before I came in, when I still thought I had a shot at doing it my way. And I allowed that void where the loneliness and the anger and the fear resided for so many, many, many decades. I basically conjured it back up. And I took God out of it, and I took my recovery out of it, and I took everything I've learned doing this work out of it, and I left it open like a wound that went to eternity without recovery, without a higher power. Without the benefit of the work that we do here, there is no hope to fill that void. And then I slowly, in my mind, put it all back a little at a time. And suddenly there was an end to it because I found the rooms. So I knew there was a solution. I didn't know if I could do it. I didn't know if I could apply it. I didn't know if it would work for me, but I knew it had worked for someone who I respected and who was beautiful, who had a great spirit in the world. And I thought, wait, I can do that. I can do that. I don't know how. And then I got a higher power and I stuffed that in there. And then I got the 12 steps and I stuffed that in. And suddenly that gaping wound that I could not feel as that little girl on the scale of my pediatrician's office was again a woman of dignity and grace in the midst of recovery who could carry the message to another person who had not yet found something to stuff into that wound, except the things that never lasted. But I didn't have such a good day that day, let me tell you. It was not an exciting adventure into hell. It was a great reminder of how far I've come and in how short an amount of time. So through high school, so I, you know, the gift of that, the gift, and I, if only the recording could see me doing air quotes, the gift of that diet was I learned how to restrict. And I was always heavy, never thin, through high school. But, you know, we all have our masks that we put on top of our disease. Mine was immense self-confidence, overachieving, big personality, lots of funny, self-deprecating humor, and loud. That was like my toolkit to get by. I was a member of student government. I was in the plays. I sang. I was in a National Honor Society. I was a hostess for my school. I was mad with busy and ate in quiet and ate in silent and snuck that and found stashes here. I didn't learn about starvation until I got to college. I think my junior year I lived on 300 calories a day. And you know what's funny is that in a room like this, everyone goes, uh-huh, yeah. Out in the real world, they go, oh my God. I'm like, I know, it's a miracle. I don't know, I shouldn't have graduated, but never mind. And what I found out was if you don't eat for a really long time, and then you eat a lot, your body will automatically expel it. What a deal. So I wasn't really bulimic because I didn't make myself throw up. Wow. Wow. The weird thing, and of course the most horrible part really in some ways, is that everyone around me kept saying, you look great. I'm like, you're not supposed to lose 50 pounds last week. That is not normal. But I set it up my whole life. What do we want to talk about? How much I've lost? How do I look? Do you like this shirt? What size am I wearing? Right? So then, by the time I get to a place where I don't want to talk about that anymore, that's all people know what to say to me. And people I haven't seen for a long time will always say, you look great, you've lost weight. It doesn't matter what I look like or how much I've weighed. I have set up this dynamic. This is the conversation we get to have. So then, at 25, by definition, I have doubt myself, sorry. At 25, I decided I need to go to OA. I have no idea what OA is. But you have to understand, when I was 25, Jenny Craig didn't exist. And AIDS was a candy supplement you ate that was basically a caramel. And then you drank a glass of water and that would fill you up. Thank God for 60 Minutes, I found out that was a crock pretty early on. But there were really no other choices. There was Weight Watchers, which at the time wasn't lovely, wasn't the point system. It was not nearly as flexible as it is today. And there was this thing called OA for overeaters. I knew I was that. So I went to a meeting. It was a noon meeting. It was an eating meeting. Is that normal? I've never been to, in this realm of my life, in the last, you know, 3.5 years, I've never been to an eating meeting. I can't imagine that's a good idea. It certainly didn't feel like a good idea in 1987 when I walked in that room and there's a whole lot of obese women sitting around eating and talking about eating. And I was like, I'm not sure this is going to work for me. I'm not really sure. I don't need an eating club. That I got. But one woman did come up to me and she said, we should talk. I'll be your sponsor. I don't even know what that is. Okay. I was kind of hoping she was going to pay me, but that wasn't what she meant. And she said, so we should talk about your food and what you eat, and we'll talk about the big book, and we'll talk about your alcohol. I said, oh, let's talk about alcohol. So I got her off on that other track. Now, I qualified, by the way, in a big, big way for that other program. And I accepted my qualification and my membership heartily. And I walked away from OA. I gave up sugar. That's good, right? That's about the same. Okay, cut to 24 years of sobriety. And I am doing cookie deals with friends like a crack addict in the driveway. Literally called a friend, knew he had to go by my store to get the thing that I really wanted more than anything, and said, he said, are you home? I am home. Do you have a car? I do, but you're gonna go by the store anyway. He was like, okay. He pulled up in my driveway, I threw $3 in his window, I grabbed the box and ran in the house. Knowing how crazy and insane it was, didn't care, had to have him right now. While I was making dinner, had to have that. Again, just enough sobriety to find a mirror and go, what are you doing? But not nearly a big enough God to understand that I had a disease. A very, very cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. And of course, the argument is, but I can't just put it down and walk away. So this is harder. You know what? Okay. I'm going to say, yeah, it is. For me, it is. I have never in my life, after that conversation with Laura, and after that 1 week of saying every day, we'll see if I call you tomorrow. On June 5th, I said, I would like to commit my food. Thank you, God. And I committed my food that day. And for the first year, I have never been more afraid of relapse of anything in my life. Because I knew for sure. You know, the greatest thing about us is we know we don't know. We know we don't know exactly what this is. We know we don't know what we could maybe try. I could try a little bit of that. I could have a bite of that. I could taste that. We know we don't know. So we get a sponsor and we get a food plan. And we stay, if we walk that walk and do the work and be of service, we have a shot. But until our God gets bigger than anything we could have imagined, that shot is tentative and tenuous at best. That is true for me. I make no bones about the fact that I only speak for me. I know that. But I am telling you, the life I live today is beyond my mother's wildest dreams for me. Never mind my own. You know, my mother would cry for me because she knew I was miserable and I hated myself. And there was nothing she could do. I understood powerless to a degree. Although, can I tell you, about 20 minutes ago, I didn't understand powerless. Like, I was like, I am powerless over the clock. I understood powerless to the extent that it wasn't a good idea for me to fill in the blank. I knew that because. Even though I had known this woman, Laura, for, at that point, almost 3 years, I didn't know any of this about her. And thank God, because I would never have called her. If the suggestion had been to call Laura because she's a member of OA, had been voiced, I would have never picked up the phone. But because we weren't going to talk about food, I was all about it. Yeah, I'll call her and talk about food. That's cool. So I believe it's our job to remember the miracles. Because they help us, one, to understand that there are things outside of my imagination that save my life if I allow them to be true, if I allow that path to be created and I take that one step at a time. So the miracle, I understood the miracle, was that Laura was in my life. I understood the miracle that she had a God bigger than I had ever imagined. She is of service 100-fold more than I have ever been. And she expected, she said, you know, I don't have a lot of time to sponsor, so if you want what I want, you will do what I do. And she asked a lot. One of the great things she asked was every day when we get on the phone, she said, we'll say a prayer together first thing, no matter what. And then you'll turn over your food. And then we'll talk a little bit. And then she, I did the writings on 1, 2, and 3. And she sat with me for 1, 2, and 3. And then she gave me 4, my assignment for 4, which was the deepest. And you have to understand, I had just finished the fourth step again. Literally came right on the heels of walking in this room and did it again, except I did it on the deepest level I have ever experienced. She had said to me, you know, I still find when I do the fifth step, or when I do the fourth step, that, you know, I start writing and God takes over. And I just thought, you are crazy. And then it happened to me. And one of the inventories that we did on the fears, I've been in program a long time, been in recovery a long time, I'd done a lot of self-work, I was in therapy forever, things came out that I'd never, ever been able to put language to. And one of them was, one of my greatest fears was that I would always confuse the feeling of contentment with being full. That being full, and I don't mean full like, oh, I've had enough. I mean full like, I'm in pain. There was a time when that was love. When that was being taken care of the only way I knew how. And I knew that wasn't right. I knew that wasn't, that can't be right. I can't stuff all of that food into my face and call that love. And so when I understood that it was a fear, and that the big book has for me a prayer, a self-made prayer, that includes the line, demonstrate through me what you can do, that level of surrender, just to say that phrase aloud, puts me into a position to be an open channel in that moment, to be of service, to do His will, to turn my will over so that I can understand something beyond my imagination. You know, once I understood that God had a much better imagination than I did, and that I had the ability to turn my will over, to say, demonstrate through me what you can do right now, right now. And then to be willing to go with it, whatever it was. It was the same thing that happened to me when I truly came to understand step 3. I was stuck, so stuck in 3. And I heard, and you know, I'd been talking to my sponsor, and I heard my sponsor say, demonstrate for me. That's not the third step. Made a decision to my will and my life over the care of God as I understood Him. And I am fighting with myself. I'm having this true inner battle saying, but I don't understand God. And if I can't get my head around God, how can I turn my will and my life over to God? How can I turn my will and my life over to God? How can I turn my will? And I heard my sponsor's voice say the third step, made a decision to turn my will and my life. What? Made a decision. Not turn my will and my life. That is not the action. The action is to make a decision. And again, I was standing at the gateway of infinite possibilities. Because I could make a decision to do that. And that was then reiterated to me in 6 and 7 when I said, mate, demonstrate through me what you can do. I have made the decision to turn my will and my life over to you, so demonstrate through me what you can do. Now there's something to celebrate. Now there's some real joy coming my way. And at the same time, I am offered the sick man's prayer for all of those people that I have, that I believe owe me an apology, first of all, right? That I have a resentment against, that I have harmed, that I have been afraid of, that I have been angry with, that I have withheld my love from. My mother used to say, "Ooh, you ransom your love. When you're angry, you ransom your love." And of course, my response is, "Well, I learned it by watching you." So sweet. Yikes. So the sick man's prayer, the prayer of letting go of fears, until I truly felt relieved. You know, my sponsor now will say, we have minds obsessed with relief. And until working this program and doing the good work is where we find the relief, we won't do what's right and best for us. So I was relieved of those resentments. I was relieved of those fears through diligent prayer and meditation, and then was sent to go and meditate and come to understand really who I owed an amends to, and wrote those out and spoke with my sponsor about them and got the script from her. We don't say we're sorry. Racism doesn't say, and made apologies wherever possible. Nope. It says made an amends. So I came to understand how I needed to amend my life, behavior, my attitude, my understanding of that which I had held against them for so many years, in some cases decades. One of those, remember that part where I said we get to remember the miracles. One of those opportunities came when an old roommate, before I got sober, so 1987, I had borrowed some money from her. She said, I did not think I borrowed money from her. I did not remember borrowing any money from her. My sponsor said, and were you sober? I said, oh, no. She goes, why don't you take her word for it then? I said, okie dokie. So there's a formula that we put into place that brought the total to about $750. And because the way we do it is to take index cards and write out the name and address, phone number, what it is, the amends I need to make, and then the script of how I'll do that. Now, the majority of my ninth step was done two years ago, so in 2013. And last November, around the time of this friend's, I had made the amends, I'd gone to see her, made the amends, and said, I owe you this money. She said, absolutely not. She said, you look amazing. You are amazing. I love you. I will not take this money from you. Okay. But I still have my index card that I carry with me everywhere because I owe the amends, whether she likes it or not, basically. Last November, I called her, said, how are you doing? She said, oh, great, if you don't count the big glass of water I just spilled all over my laptop. I said, oh, no. And this is a woman who's had very, very difficult times, suffering horribly with MS, financial ruin, you know, just some serious stuff that she's gotten through. And I said, I said, well, can you get it refurbished? Can you get it fixed? She said, yeah, it costs about $750. I said, yay! She was like, you're weird. I said, no, that's what I owe you. She said, I'm not taking your money. I said, no, you don't understand. This isn't about you. God did this. God did this. She said, I don't believe you. I said, I can take a picture of the index card that I carry with me everywhere and prove it. So I got to send her that index card that says, this is what I owe you. And she let me pay for her computer. Who's excited about spending $750 on someone else's computer? Me? So grateful that it happened just like my sponsor said it would. You do the work, and God will take care of the rest. And you'll be grateful and happy to have done this. And you'll feel blessed to have gotten this money. Okay, how even I got the money was another miracle unto itself, but never mind, let's move on. So, but what you need to understand is that in this time of these great blessings, and my God getting exponentially bigger on a regular basis, the challenges of my life were exponentially getting bigger too. I gave back, lost, don't have anymore, however you want to put it, about 100 pounds in this program. And in the meantime, my marriage dissolved. My finances dissolved. My business went belly up. I'm giving back or losing my house. I was hospitalized last year with this thing called transient global amnesia, which was stress-induced. And I believe, a sign from God, that I needed to take care of myself. So within hours, really, of days, certainly, of being released from the hospital, I went to the bankruptcy attorney, I went to the divorce attorney, I sat down with the soon-to-be ex-husband and said, here's what we're going to do. And it was not comfortable. But my God was bigger and bigger the whole time, because I was willing to make these choices. I was willing to take these steps that I absolutely understood were the right thing. I had a woman call me today who's she was literally 4 years and 10 months cancer-free before it came back. She knows she's got 2 years tops. She has 4 special needs children. She has a marriage that has disintegrated, and she said, how do you know when you're doing God's will? I said, there is a peace that comes with the choices that feel like the next right thing, but never confuse peace for comfort, because it can be remarkably uncomfortable. But it is a discomfort, not like that void, not like that wound that was open for so many years. It's a discomfort that means I'm taking myself out of this very safe place, and I'm stepping into a world where I am loved unconditionally and completely cared for by a power greater than myself that I choose to call God. And she accepted that for now. You know, one of the gifts of my third step with my sponsor was the story about a proverb about a Chinese farmer. And the thrust of it is, said William Shakespeare, nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. I'm quite sure that Debbie did not think that pouring a glass of water on her computer would bring me such joy. Mm-hmm. But what I know for sure is that I don't get to judge the things that happen in my life anymore. I have become the woman who used to annoy me the most in meetings. I no longer talk about challenges, I talk about opportunities. I no longer say I have to, I always say I get to. I know that I am walking through a miracle. But as I said to someone recently who has walked through truly more miracles than I have, I said, you're not the miracle, don't confuse yourself. We are walking through the miracle because of the power greater than ourselves that we have to rely upon. This lovely woman who has faced this outrageous challenge in our rooms, she said, how do I know when I'm doing God's will? And when I shared with her that I believe that there is a peace that comes with this unconditional love, she said, I've never understood the concept of unconditional love. I do not get that. She said, how can I find it? said, wow, that's a really good question. And I offered her the opportunity to sit in meditation and believe it. You know, step two for me was not anything I did, it was everything you did. Because of you, I came to believe. Because of how you showed up, because of the pictures you showed me about before and after, because of the things you walked through that other people would have crumbled under. Because of the things you did, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And what that meant, and what that means to me, is something that someone taught me, that it restores our spirit to us. That the sanity or the insanity is really a broken spirit. I can't tell you what broke my spirit as a little girl. I knew that food would help me feel better. That's all I knew for sure. And the thing that sticks with me still is that seventh grader standing on the scale, looking at her mother saying, "Is that a lot?" I had no concept of good or bad, fat or skinny. All I knew was that I needed love more than my mother could offer me, more than the world at that time could give me. And of course now what I know is it's not what they could give me or not give me, it's what I could accept. And so now that hole, by my choices and by the work that I do, is filled with unconditional love. By definition, you are invited to come in and find that for yourself here. Through a power greater than you that you discover, that you define. I'll end with this. When Bill talks about Winchester Cathedral, there is a small sentence that is often overlooked that is the beginning of his spiritual journey. "Much moved, I wandered outside." Until we become willing, until we can know that we are open to the healing, to the recovery that is offered here, God can present himself 100 different ways to us. "Much moved, I wandered outside." And then later he says, it was only after Ebby shared with him that he could have his own conception of God, that he understood those moments in the cathedral those many years ago. It had been his first experience that God does not make too hard a terms for those who honestly seek him. You can demand he show himself. He wants you to invite him in, however you define it. Thank you for my recovery. It's mine.